Hello. Today is April 12th, 2024, at 11:10 a.m. as I'm recording this episode. The market is pretty down today, I'd say. It's a pretty red Friday. In general, the market's down. Let's see. Let's look at QQQ. QQQ is down 1.6%, which is pretty big, considering it's a very large ETF. And so is SPY. SPY is down 1.3%. And literally every single stock in my watch list is red except Apple. Apple this week has broken out of its downtrend, and for Apple to be green on such a red day can't be understated. So maybe I start looking at Apple a little bit more. Apple this year was trading at around at the top or at the very end of last year, December 15th, at a high of $197. It's gone down quite a bit, down to 169, nice, as of a recent, and it's now rebounded to 175. It's got a good amount of support here around the 170 to 175 area, so maybe it's worth looking at now. But my recent opinion on Apple, that's no longer the pseudo bank account it used to be. Like, I think back in the day, as I was learning about stocks, like before options, like pre-2019, I've always been taught that Apple is like essentially a glorified savings account. You just put your money in Apple, everything's gonna be okay. My opinion on that has really shifted since like 2022, and I've really felt like Apple is lagging behind. But we see a lot of their newer line of chips being more AI focused, AI being a very strong buzzword as of late. So we'll see if that materializes into anything. But for now, yeah, the market is very, very red, and Apple is my only green stock that I do not own, but is on my watch list that's green. I was just talking about today on the stream. By the way, if you haven't checked the stream yet, it's at 9 a.m. Pacific time at twitch.tv/realthetagang. We just hang out, we just talk. You can see me trade. You can ask me questions about some trades that you might be in. It's a good time. We talk about random stuff sometimes. Today, we were talking about a little bit about the job market. Later today, I'm helping one of my friends work on his resume. I'm helping another friend work on some mock coding interviews, specifically system design interviews. That's like kind of my specialty because, building Theta Gang, I work a lot with just system design. It's like kind of my background in my last two previous professional experiences as well. So, helping him with that. The job market seems pretty tough. And for anyone that might have gotten laid off recently, just as like some little bit of motivation, I know personally three friends this month, so in the last like 12 days, that have gotten hired at smaller stage startups, and one of them at a little bit more than just a startup, I'd say, is a pretty big company. All three as software engineers. So if you're a software engineer, maybe you know that's a tech winter. And it's hard to get a job. I have friends that are getting jobs right now. I have a good other bunch of handful of people or friends that haven't got jobs yet as well, in case if you're still looking. But I just do want to let you know that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I think if you do put in the amount of preparation that you need to, and you actually set aside time to mass apply everywhere, I think you'll be fine. So maybe you're down in the dumps a little, but I just want to let you know people are hiring, and I am just one more data point to, put on your checklist. A little bit of a status update from me. As I don't have a typical 9-to-5 job, I do this podcast, I do the Twitch stream, and I do thetagang.com full time now. This week was the first week where I had to pull out money from my main account, from my tastytrade account. I pulled out money to be able to cover my incoming rent for this month, or for not this month because I just paid it, but for next month. So that's just something to be aware of. Like, I'm officially now on the burn rate timer, and I feel it. I feel the fires beneath my butt. As I want to continue to provide for my partner. Just like a little bit of insight, right now we pay 50-50 on rent. So while I don't pay her a portion of the rent, I do pay for like everything else, like our streaming services and utilities, parking spot, like anything that's like extra, like internet bill, like that sort of stuff. And I like to continue doing that. It's like an ego thing for me, right? I would almost feel bad, you know, if I didn't do it. It's just like a, I don't know if it's how I was raised, right? Like I feel like I just had a good role models around me where I just want to continue to provide. I think that meta is sort of shifting, but you know, it's okay. It's okay, everyone that has their own sort of goals. So I want to keep that still in line. And to be honest, it's not that much more. So it's not making a big impact. Of course, rent is still the biggest impact, which I break even on now through Patreon. So thank you so much for everyone that signed up on Patreon. If you want to help support me and maybe get a few perks along the way for ThetaGang.com and get a shout out at the end of the podcast and extra attention on the stream, you can go to patreon.com/thetagang, and if there's a seat open for you, feel free to just swoop it. If there's not a seat, it just means that some people are currently signing up and I'm just waiting for, you know, the churn to sort of slow down. Sometimes there's a lot of people that join at one time and I don't want the culture to change too quickly. So there's like this artificial limiting of seats that I do where if you see a spot and you want it, you should probably take it. Otherwise, just wait for one to open up. Another spot will eventually open up, so there's no rush on that end either. But yeah, so fire beneath my butt, in my sort of extra spare time. I honestly wouldn't even consider spare time. I attribute a lot of it to ThetaGang as well. I've been learning a lot about cybersecurity, and I want to go to DEF CON. DEF CON is a convention. Don't know what DEF means, but sounds cool. It's where it's a convention where a lot of hackers, a lot of the best hackers in the world will go to once a year in Las Vegas. I think it's historically been in Las Vegas. And they just come together and hack. And it's really awesome. I've always wanted to go. And I'm doing like a first series of capture the flag exercises on a few websites, and it's been really rewarding. I've taken a lot of what I've learned. I've tried to like sort of do a lot of these checks on ThetaGang.com just to make sure I'm kept up with security standards. It seems like I am, but of course I'm also learning that every single thing can be hacked into. It's like one of the principles of hacking, and it makes sense. If you have a key to something, something can be unlocked. It's just maybe, you know, the window isn't open on all the parts of the software in the world. Maybe you just need the key, but the fact that you have a key to open it means that it can be opened. Anyway, I just think it's really cool. I will most likely be going. I think it's in August this year. I don't see any sort of event that would keep me from going. I have my calendar all updated, so if anyone wants to meet up, I think I'll be at DEF CON this year in August. And yeah. All right. And one more announcement. The Theta Gang shirt is done. Yeah, I put a lot of effort into this thing, organizing the design, making the design, also, you know, going over to the place to get it stitched, going to another place to get a screen printed. And yeah. It comes with four colors, and dude, screen printing with four colors is so much more expensive than screen printing just like the color white or doing a two-color printing. Because of the logos on the back, there's just four colors, so like, oh my goodness. It makes the shirt a little bit more expensive to produce, but it looks amazing. I love the shirt. I'm gonna be wearing it a lot on stream. And if you want your own shirt and help support the website, podcast, and stream, then you can get your shirt at shop.thetagang.com. Except when you're listening to this, there could be a chance that the shirt is not there. I'm going to have to take some pictures of the shirt, make it look nice, and then I don't know if I'm going to model for it. Maybe I do. I'm not sure. But it's done, and I'm super excited. So just keep checking shop.thetagang.com out. I'll probably make one more announcement on the podcast next week. And there, if who knows, maybe it is out. So just go check out the page anyway. If you are a patron, you'll be getting a discount code for the shirt. I don't know how much the shirt will cost, but if you're a patron, expect a discount code from me because you already help support me and the podcast and the stream and the website. So It's the least that I can do, especially for supporting me on everything else. And then on top of that, buying a shirt. So appreciate you guys so much. And yeah, thank you. I'm so excited for the shirt. So I'll give sneak peeks in the Discord and stuff. But yeah, we'll see if I can get all that done by Monday. If not, I'll just make one more announcement next week. All right. Today's episode, pretty relevant for today. I think it's a very common topic, very common question that comes up, especially during days that are red. You see a lot of these questions come up on like R Options or R Theta Gang, even Wall Street Bets sometimes in the discussion thread. And it's usually around centered around the question of when to cut losses. You know, there's so many ways that we can define this question. You know, you can say like, you know, when do I close out of my long call? When do I close out of my long put? Maybe the market's going up and your puts are losing. Or maybe when do I close out of my losing covered call? When do I close out of my losing cash secured put? The reason why I bring up these trade types is I'm trying to take out the bias of, you know, someone might say, oh, Junie, you always assume long calls and long puts lose. Well, no, I've definitely been on the losing end of a cash secured put before. While it's rare, I've also been on losing end of a covered call before. Like, I wouldn't say that's never happened. It just has not happened definitely recently, but it happens. Especially if you just don't know any better. And because this podcast is tailored towards people that are newer, you know, just because you switch over to a different methodology of, or a different method of trading, it doesn't mean the losses are going to suddenly stop. The losses might happen less frequently, but it's still managing losers that's going to set you apart from someone that doesn't know how to manage losers. Because everyone can make money when the market goes up, but only like I'd say like a sub percentage of people can retain that money on the way down. Like, what strategies do you do to retain your profits, or when do you cut your losses, or how do you manage your losses? For the long side, like say for example, you buy calls and you buy puts, something that I think is more standard practice, if you're a little bit more active of a trader, maybe you can cut your losses at like maybe minus 50%. Your option loses 50% of its value. Maybe you could cut your losses there. You buy a call for $100, Apple doesn't move or Apple goes down and your call is now worth $50. Maybe consider cut your losses there. You know, having that rule in your system might be good for you to trade a little bit less emotionally, or with less emotion. Wow, I'm having trouble speaking today. Imagine someone that didn't have a plan, right? That didn't have this sort of stop loss. Maybe their Apple call goes down to $50 and they say, you know what? I'm going to double down. I'm not going to cut my losses. I'm just going to double down. It could work out great for them, but what could also happen is they could lose double the amount of money. Right now, we're only talking about $50, but you already know that there are people out there that trade with thousands of dollars with the same logic, because maybe they're just jaded to the amount of like money that they're trading with. So it does happen, and it's easy to overlook it. On the short option side, maybe a covered call or a cash secured put, say the stock goes down on your cash secured put, and you know when you buy it back, it's more expensive. When you're maybe down minus 50%, you can consider maybe closing it out. Maybe the contract has gone up 50% in value. You have to buy it back for 50% more. Same example, if you did a cash secured put on Apple, Apple maybe goes down, and then you know you eventually want to exit for minus 50%. That could be a good option too, except what happens if you decide, you know what, I think Apple will bounce here. I'll sell another cash secured put. Okay, or maybe, you know what, I will buy calls here instead of cutting my loss. You know, I'm going to capture this bounce. I'm going to stay in this trade, et cetera, et cetera. What I'm sort of alluding to is sometimes it's not enough to just cut your losses. Sometimes it's more about just being aware of what you are capable of doing. And that sounds kind of scary because, you know, when you are trading emotionally or when you're down on a position, your mind starts to cope. It starts to justify really weird decision making. And I think a lot of people that have traded for a long time understand this sort of feeling, is when you're down on a position, start thinking illogically, because while trading on paper seems very easy because you could write down all these rules, like be greedy when others are fearful, fearful when others are greedy. You can say like never trade with money you can't afford to lose. But we lose sight of those things when we see red on the screen. So the number one action that I think you can do when trying to understand when to cut your losses is to find out when you're going to cut your losses. It means that you're going to actively commit to not doubling down, or maybe you do commit to doubling down, but you make it a decision that you make beforehand, right? There's a difference, right? Junie, you're not telling me whether or not I should cut my losses or if I should double down. You're letting me know that I have a choice. I get it. I always have a choice. You will always have a choice, but you won't always have this like system of designed rules just tailored for yourself. If you say, for example, in the car today, say that, you know what, instead of doubling down for the next like 3 months, I'm only going to ever cut my losses. Maybe this will help me more because I realize that whenever I double down, I seem to have a higher chance of losing, which you can only really reflect on and see if you log your trades. I use thetagame.com. You can use your own spreadsheet, but you can only detect this pattern if, you know, you're being aware of it, you're logging it. But maybe you come up with a rule. First step of when to cut losses is to just not double down, which could result in more losses. So we're just choosing not to do that. Instead, what we're going to do is, if we don't have a system yet, we're going to come up with a number right now in the car as you're driving. You're just going to think about it while paying attention to traffic. You're going to think about, okay, for long calls, if I'm down minus 50%, I will always just sell out of the position. I'm going to have this like max loss I'm going to define for myself. You can put a stop loss order in if you know how to do that. But what I'm trying to say is have decisions made prior to yourself trading. Cause as I'm speaking, you know, right now the market is still open as I am recording this episode. When the beginning of this episode, I was down minus 2.8K for the day. Right now I'm down 3.8K for the day. So as I was recording, I essentially lost unrealized, of course, but I lost $1,000. And because I already know when I'm going to sort of close out of my positions or when I'm going to get assigned, I'm not necessarily sweating. It sucks looking at that number, but I know that at the end of the day, my shares will be called away at a certain price or I would be receiving a certain amount of premium. So I feel, I think, more safe compared to someone that might not know, you know, when exactly they want to sell. I already know when I want to sell and when I want to, like, quote, cut my losses. And cutting my losses in my style of trading just means that my shares will be assigned. Like, I'll pick up 100 shares at a certain price, or my shares will be called away at a certain price. So it's a little bit less stressful for me. But you can see how days like today that are very down, long calls and long puts. Long puts are printing right now, by the way. But long calls would be very stressful. Right? When do I cut my losses? Do I buy more calls today? It's a Friday. Maybe I wait till Monday for a bounce, or who knows? Maybe there's a dead cat bounce on Monday, so I'll buy some more calls today, even though today there's like a steep drop in price. It's very, very hard. And your mind is going to be thinking of all kinds of questions, trying to decipher whether or not you should double down or cut your losses. But what we're doing today, if you haven't already, it's just coming with that system. What percentage are you going to be taking a loss on your long call or long put? And then, of course, not doubling down for a few months. Maybe, you know, if you have success doubling down, I think you can continue doing that. But I would say, I would think, and this, I would assume that doubling down doesn't actually work for you, because it's very gambler-esque to double down in the market and just hope that it hits, okay? If it works for you, I applaud your success. I think that's really great. Not downplay or anything, not sarcastic at all. I think that's super cool. But I'd say for the majority of people, doubling down when you don't know what you're doing and you don't have a system of rules to sell, it ends up really bad. So just be careful. On the short side, and this is getting into a little bit of my bread and butter, right? Like when I talk about long calls and stop losses on long calls, or like talking about long puts, that's a realm of trading that I haven't quite explored as deeply as I have explored the short side. The short side, the with cash secured puts and covered calls and, you know, some other types of short trading, I'm very, very familiar with. So when it comes to the short side, when if you have a cash secured put or a covered call, for a cash secured put, I mean, if you're not taking an assignment, I really think you're not letting the numbers play out. And that's my own sort of general opinion there. If you don't get assigned on your cash secured put, or if you're not willing to be assigned on the cash secured put, you shouldn't be writing it. I think what a lot of people will end up doing is they'll be very, you know, optimistic that the market is heading up and maybe they're learning about the trading strategy and they're really excited. And they say, you know, maybe AMD is trading at like $160 right now. And they say, you know what? AMD has had an amazing run. I'm going to sell the 155 cash secured put because you know what? It's a win-win. If AMD goes down to 155, I'll buy it at 155 because of my cash secured put. Or if it keeps on going up, I'll keep my premium. It's a win-win. Then AMD goes down to 150 because although AMD is a great company, great stock, great leader, everything, great product, it's due for some correction because it's done so well. AMD trades at 150. Your cash secured put is in the money by $5, leading to maybe like a $500 loss if you close it out prior to expiration, not letting it get called or getting it assigned. You're going to maybe say, nah, I don't want the shares. I'm going to take the $500 loss instead, which is an okay strategy. I think there are people that would rather do that. But in the longer span of trading, I think that strategy is doomed to lose. Because a lot of what makes cash secured puts so powerful is that your max loss acquiring shares gives you an infinite amount of time to be correct. If you just end up holding the shares and work on the shares with covered calls, you'll be okay. Of course, all of this logic gets thrown out the window if you're trading like a penny stock with covered calls and cash secured puts, or you're trading a company that doesn't deserve its valuation. And this is where a lot of my bias comes in, because AMD can be overpriced according to some people, Nvidia can be overpriced to some people, Costco could be. So it's the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, okay? But if you're trading an irresponsible company, maybe it's very Bitcoin related, maybe it's farm tech related, maybe it's, I don't know, gold related, gold mining, I don't know, any of these very volatile companies, maybe it's Tesla related, okay? This logic gets thrown out the window. But if you fundamentally believe in a company and you're getting assigned to own the company, it's not that bad. The hard part is that people open cash secured puts on companies that they think that they want to own at prices that they think they want to buy it at. And it's days like today that you will get tested. If you want to sell out of your cash secured put for a loss, if you want to cut your losses today on cash secured put and just get out, this is a very big red flag in your trading system that you should very much, you know, just be more aware of for your next trade. Just remember this experience today, or, you know, as you're listening to this on Monday, just remember your experience on Friday and just think to yourself, okay, you know what? I closed out my cash secured put early and actually didn't want to get assigned, so I closed it out early. You know, I didn't let the numbers play out, so maybe this higher probability of profit isn't really that great, because I just dumped, you know, $16,000 into this cash secured put for an extended period of time, for however long you were in the contract. Because that's what the contract would be sort of worth if you, you know, sold the 160 put and you got out with a loss. But maybe next time, instead of tying up $16,000, you can just buy a call. And maybe that call costs, I don't know, $100 or $200, right? So there's pros and cons. And depending on how you manage your losers and how you manage your winners, different strategies start to look better even on paper. If you're planning to close out of cash secured put for a loss, there's a good chance that you can find an equal chance of winning in the money call that just might be better if you're looking to explore different types of strategies. I won't go quite into that sort of topic today, but just know that if you're planning on choosing to, say, for example, close Cash Kipritz out early for a loss, or covered calls, selling covered calls on your cost basis, there are tons of other different strategies that might just be better for you. That includes like dollar cost averaging. Maybe you like stay in your position, but you just dollar cost average with stock. And that's also going to depend on how much money you have on the side. Last week, we talked a little bit about dollar cost averaging into a favorite stock with your leftover cash, right? Like instead of cutting your losses on a particular strategy, you can just buy stocks of that company. Of course, I did allude to that maybe we commit to not doubling down, right? And that's more along the lines of like options. Options obviously require a lot of capital. But you know, if you're buying long shares, maybe it's a good happy medium if you commit to not doubling down on options, but you know, you still want to buy the dip. Dollar cost averaging is always not a bad idea. I think if you do it responsibly, you're doing it with cash that's just literally cash in your account. You know, you have a good amount of your account, it's still invested. I think a small dollar cost average is good. You don't need to spend all of your leftover cash into whatever dollar cost averaging into, because that's at the end of the day really not dollar cost averaging. Dollar cost averaging requires you to be depositing in a very regular interval to be like officially called dollar cost averaging. I also don't want to sound like I'm on a soapbox, primarily because I've also had trouble with cutting losses. So in 2022, my worst year, however, I still beat the market. I had less of a loss than SPY. My 2022 year, I was trading PayPal. And it was very, very hard for me to look outside of my tunnel vision to see that PayPal was just not heading in a good direction. It had a very, very large boost in revenue and traffic just from like eBay during quarantine, and also like Twitch donations through Twitch. Like it had a lot going for it. But at the end of the day, once people returned to office and you know everyone went back to living their normal lives, PayPal has very much corrected from its meteoric rise that it once had. And I was dollar cost averaging the entire way down. And I was dollar cost averaging with shares, but I was also sort of doubling down. I was writing more cash secured puts as I was going down for my sort of dollar cost averaging. You know, if PayPal was trading at like, I don't know, $200, maybe I then sell the cash secured put at 180, and I sell the cash secured put at 160. And, you know, I'd eventually get to a PayPal position of like 400 shares at some points while the stock is going way, way down. And while I didn't know when to cut my losses then, I know when to cut my losses now, at least I believe. But a large part of that in my recent trading has just been doing buy rights that keep me very safe when I do enter in very volatile markets where I want to put a lot of money in. For example, NVIDIA today is down $30, which translates to about like a $3,000 loss if I just bought the shares outright. But because I have a covered call on, I've already received about $1,500 for the day on the covered call, which is insane. So it's giving me a good buffer where I'm only down about $1,000 on the day for NVIDIA, despite it being down $30 and I have 100 shares. So I'm finding strategies that help me get a good start on red days, and today's definitely one of those days where I feel very rewarded. But I can't say that, I wouldn't be able to say that for 2022. But if 2022 didn't happen, I don't think I'd be able to have the sort of experience, insight that I would need to be able to trade markets like today. Like today, very much down like 3.8K still as I'm recording this episode. And because I'm doing buy rights that are deeper in the money, establishing a good cost basis, working on multiple sort of stocks at one time instead of just trading one stock like I was when I was trading like PayPal. I was trading a lot of AMD at that time too, so that's maybe not a fair comparison, but PayPal definitely took up a lot of my attention. But if that hadn't happened to me, I wouldn't be able to sort of share my insights and knowledge on today's podcast episode. So that also relates to you. while maybe you haven't had an experience yet where you had to sort of cut losses. Maybe because you joined the stock market in 2023 when the market has really gone up a lot and there's a lot of AI craze that makes a lot of the stocks really done really well. But as of late, this market has been very turbulent. Lots of big ups, lots of big downs, and mixed in between. Like, it's really hard to tell if the stock market's gonna go up or down. There's a lot of rate cut news going left and right. But once you get the feel of things and how your money is moving, you'll be able to be the judge of when to cut losses a lot better. Today, when I'm recording this episode, it's just a reminder just to maybe have these decisions of like when to cut losses, how to manage your losers, when to dollar cost average. Have these decisions already made before you get there. Like, just assume that your next trade will be red as an exercise. And what are you going to do if it reaches, you know, this price that's maybe like $20 lower? Okay. And that's, I think, would be a really good place to start. If maybe you want to maybe invest into Intel, right? Like, Intel has been taking a beating as of late, and you might be more interested than ever to start a Intel position. But something that might help you is just, what if Intel dropped $4 more? Can I buy 100 shares of Intel? Can I buy another 100 shares of Intel at $34? Yes? Great. So maybe I just buy 100 shares now, and if it reaches 34, I'll just buy another 100 shares. If, say, for example, Intel goes up while you have that plan, I think that's also a win. But at least you came up with a decision prior to it happening. I think there's a much larger percentage of people that might just buy 100 shares of Intel and just hope for the best. But if you plan your losses ahead of time, it makes days like today way less scary. So if you're asking someone when to cut your losses, you should already know. You should already have thought about like when to cut. Like, this is a very pre-planned activity. But if you're looking for more like metrics on when to cut losses, there's tons of resources online and everyone has their own opinion. I think when it comes to long options, for me personally, it's whenever I lose minus 50%. For short options, I always get assigned, and that's my take. So I'm not going to say that's what you should do, because I don't feel comfortable sort of telling you to do something that I don't quite do as often. So I'm not going to tell you that minus 50% is the best thing for long options, but I might tell you that I would suggest getting assigned or getting your shares called away via cash secured puts and covered calls, because it's worked out so well for me these last 4.5 years. Lastly, I'm going to leave you guys with a little bit of a Juniism. It's something that I used to say much more a long time ago, like in maybe 2020, 2021. Dude, it's crazy how long this podcast has been around. And I think it's almost equally as crazy that I've been able to trade it as well as I have for as much like poop that I talk sometimes. But in this case, one of the poops is if you have to ask someone if you should sell a position, right? This is a little bit different than when to cut your losses. It's a little bit less of a defined or definitive question. But if you have to ask someone, should I sell this stock? You should sell it. That's my number one Juniistic take. Like, if you have to ask someone on how to manage your position, you need to get out, because it means you don't have a plan, and you need to rethink things. Of course, if you're up on the position and you're like, hey, should I exit for a profit right now? I think that's a little bit different, because you have a buffer to be correct, right? You can lose some of your gains while you think on your decision or ask people, you know, or like gather resources to come up with your own sort of plan on when to exit. But if, say, for example, you're really red on a position, that can go a lot more red. Like, for I imagine the scenario of someone selling a naked call. It's very red, and someone's like, should I close out my naked call that I'm down like a few thousand dollars on? It's like, yes, you should more than likely sell out of that right now in case if the rally continues. Because if you don't have a plan, you're going to do something really crazy when that number becomes way more red. So the flip side of it, and why I think it's safer to just close out of your loss if you're in that scenario where you're asking someone else, hey, should I sell out of my position for a loss, is that you can always buy back in with whatever position you're closing out of. I mean, assuming that, like, I don't know, maybe that's not such a definitive rule, because I'm sure that there's some way you can break that rule. But I'd say for most cases, say if you do cut your losses somewhere for the day, like you just hear this, you're down so much on something right now, taking the realization on the loss is not a bad thing. Granted, I think maybe the one thing that I look out for is maybe you held on to the stock for more than a year and maybe you think that there's a chance for it to bounce back, then I think that could be okay, because then you're subject to long-term gains than short-term gains. And so protecting your tax your tax rules there might be sort of efficient. But that's getting sort of to like the more experienced side. I'm talking to more like the person that gets into the meme stock. They're down huge on the meme stock, and they're asking, hey, should I hold on to this meme stock? And it's like, more than likely, no. And in case if it does bounce, dude, you're trading a meme stock. It's very volatile. It's all luck-based anyway. You can't beat yourself up for it. But you do have to protect yourself at all times. And part of protecting is knowing how to manage your trade. If you don't know how to manage your trade, or you don't know when to sell, it's effectively going into a paintball arena without a paintball gun. Okay, you're really sort of asking for it. You don't know what you're going to be doing there. You're hoping your team wins. You don't have a gun, but you might be the last guy on the team and you don't have a paintball gun, and suddenly you're like, hey, does anyone have a gun? Or a paintball gun? I don't want to get flagged. Yeah. So just be aware. If you feel like you're always asking someone, when do I cut my losses, or should I sell out of this stock? Because you could have gotten into that stock because of someone's comment on Reddit, right? Like, I've done that before in my past in the discussion thread on Wall Street Bets, and you're like, oh, there's this EV stock this person is interested in. Oh, this person's buying calls. Hey, you know what? I just got paid on my paycheck. I'll buy a few calls here. Then the stock goes down, and then you reach back. You go back to the discussion thread for that day, and you're like, you maybe continue the thread, and you say, bro, you still in? And then that's typically like the same verbiage as like, hey, should I sell? You're like asking for some validation, like, are you still in your position, because I'm thinking about selling out my position. And they just don't end up replying, because, you know, they just don't want to talk about it, or they're just too busy with their lives, and you feel lost, and then you feel like you're in this void alone, because you're like, should I sell this position? The person that got me in isn't replying, and I have no plan. Typically, my general answer is yes. But there's always ways to break your rules. I think there's that saying that rules are meant to be broken. There's always a way into the box, as I'm learning from cybersecurity stuff. But yeah, it's very tricky, and you'll never know what the right answer is. And if you're planning to do this for the rest of your life, and I am, whether or not this works out full time, or, you know, I have to end up working again, or with anything, I'm planning to trade for the rest of my life. I've made returns that make it worth it for me to continue this hobby that I love doing. And a part of that is just staying alive long enough to be able to see the fruits of my education. Because we know that if you take a expensive loss, you can see that as an expensive lesson if you continue trading. But a part of trading is just like learning enough by staying afloat enough. A lot of people get got and then just end up quitting, which is a shame, because the stock market is a great way to make returns and have money work for you. The only reason why I think we can afford the wedding that we're about to have, me and my fiance, is because of my returns in the stock market. You know, I've made a good bunch of premiums, a good bunch of profit from 2020, 2021. I took a small loss in 2022. 2023 was a great year, and this 2024 year is also great. Beating SPY already, and that feels amazing. It's rewarding. But we get caught up with learning so much because we're excited. You know, we're excited to make money from the stock market, and we know that there's so much information on the internet, and we want to come up with like our own strategy because we want to, you know, have some pride in the way that we trade. And oh, I'm making money on this stock. You know, it's good water cooler talk. People love talking about stocks when the stock market's up, and we all like to feel a little bit feel a little smart. Okay. But that is a double-edged sword, where if you maybe venture off to like the top 1% of like this knowledge pool of this very specific way of trading, maybe you start experimenting with naked calls, or you start experimenting with like this, I don't know, this trading algorithm that says you got to double down and triple down and quadruple down. That's where people sort of get lost of maybe the fundamentals of, you know, at the very end of the day, buying and holding stock is pretty good, as seen by, you know, Warren Buffett. I know a lot of people say, oh, Warren was able to get in with because he was so rich and he had a head start on everybody. But there's a lot to be learned by just buying and holding stock, and why sometimes your partner, and I'm just going to assume because 98% of you, or maybe 97% of you now, are male, according to my Spotify analytics. According to, you know, those analytics, and speaking very generally, there's a reason why your partner is better than you at trading, because typically it's just one partner in the relationship that is into stocks. The other one is pretty aloof, okay? And that's guys or girls. I see that in all types of orientations, that the other partner just doesn't care. There's one partner that cares, and there's another one that doesn't care. There's a reason why the one that doesn't care, that doesn't touch their account, that doesn't do really much of anything, chances are that their stocks are doing great, you know? And here you are struggling with just like barely making ends meet and maybe making profit for the year, not beating SPY by doing all these crazy strategies, by trying to buy puts because you think that this the market's top and you think the economy is overhyped and you think, you know, interest rates are dooming us. You have all this knowledge that most of the world doesn't care about. And it can be a double-edged sword. I think it could pay off very well if you use it in moderation. But, I mean, what doesn't pay off well in moderation? Maybe heroin. Maybe heroin in moderation doesn't pay off well. So maybe there's that. But you guys get what I mean. Don't be the hero. Like, don't try to buy the bottom. Don't try to catch a knife. But don't try to be smart either. Don't try to be too smart, is what I'm trying to say. I'll see everybody next week on next week's podcast episode. I'm going to go into the outro and maybe a little bit into the 1% section. So have a great rest of your day. Today was a bit longer of a conversation, but it was very good. I had a lot of enjoyment recording this one. So I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I'll see everyone next week. Later. A huge, huge thank you to my patrons that support me on patreon.com/thetagang. Doing this full-time is super scary, as, again, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I've officially started pulling out money from my main TastyTrade account. So my butt is on a timer. I need to sort of make this thing work as I am now on a burn rate, I guess. It's hard to say because this was just one more of my volatile months because I had to make the shirts. So it ate up a good bit of my checking account, which I've had a good little lump sum in. But anyway, yeah, huge thank you to my patrons at patreon.com/thetagang. They help keep the lights on, like literally, because I'm paying the utility bills. So thank you to Fancy Wolf, Los Pepes, Mods, Upstream Puddle, Ensis88, Peter, B-Schwartz23, Infinitude, Espresso Bean, Joe Quirt, EDC, Travella Desserts, Kevlar22, Bachata Thug, Cube Suki, Nala, J Perkins 86, Lewis BG, Troop 947, T Wall 3252, LPL, Alexander Kerm, Slow Mo, Rustier, Steve Katsy, The Jester, Grandpa 95, Young Rich, Chicken Dinner, Kaput, Sumatrix, KJ Martin, Statistically Random, Turbo Ricky, Maestro XC, Benadushi, Theta Collector, Tyler M97, Lord Skeletor, Major, Tecomi Elmo, Avrillian, R.S. Schmitty, Y-Teen, Danube 9000, Danger 10, McFly, Husk P, Mr. Integrity, Rooster, Garrix, Loido, LeBoomer, Bearded Savage, Dang High, Bustin, Justin, Andy V, Arfman, Meh, Vegeta Plank, Camp McMoney, IRL, Maloko, Mothman, 1856. The reason why my voice might seem a little bit quieter or further away from the mic is because my microphone is in such a weird spot for my monitor on the left, because my mic actually goes through or between my two monitors in a way where I can't look at my monitor that has my patron's name on it effectively. So I have to like turn my neck, and I'm like looking at the list to like with the very edge of my eyes. And yeah, that's why my voice kind of sounds far away. Anyway, talking about the, it's so funny. Why do I do this like very off the cuff market talk at the end? It's so weird. Let me put a note. Talk about general thoughts on market in the beginning of episode, because I feel like a lot of people would care more about this than, I don't know, maybe some other topics. You know, I do understand there are some people that just like listen for the vibes. Well, but there's also some people that just actually do care about what I think about the market. So yeah, got that saved. Okay. Anyway, my general vibe right now, this market be cray. Okay. My profit loss on the day, as I was like talking about like the near at the end of the episode, it was down to -$4,000. Now it's -$3,000. But at the beginning of this episode, it was -$2,000. This market is going nuts. And I'm not touching anything. It's crazy. Right now, kind of just like letting my trades churn. I'm getting my Palo Alto Networks trade by my buy right, getting called away, which feels so awesome because I feel like I picked the perfect strike here. Let's see what else. So stocks that pique my absolute interest right now. Number one is ELF. I'm wondering, why are you going down? You were the chosen one. Another one is Costco. I love Costco more than ever right now, especially with layoffs still continuing, though people are still hiring. I alluded to that a little bit, or not alluded to, but I literally said it in the beginning of the episode. I still like Costco a lot. I like Costco more than any other stock. I think Costco is my favorite stock. I think it overtakes Nvidia in terms of like how safe I feel trading it. So Costco, I mean, it can go down. I'll always feel good knowing that, like, hey, if interest rates continue to suck, it's going to put more pressure on the consumer, inflation. Dude, people don't want to spend too much on groceries. And where are you going to go? I feel bad when I don't shop at Costco, even though I hate the experience. So it means something's there. Something else that I like is, dude, this should really be in the episode. But I mean, if you listen to the patrons' names and you stick around, maybe you get rewarded. No. Next week I'll do something in the meat of the episode. I like Intel. Intel's really cool. It has a -5% day today, which is, I mean, I talk about it a lot on the stream, maybe not too much on the podcast, but for the amount of premium that you get, it's not worth writing the cash secured put or the covered call, in my opinion. So because volatility for Intel is so low, dude, imagine if you bought puts for Intel, right? And I know I talk trash about buying puts all the time, but if you buy options on stocks like Intel that don't have a lot of volatility, but they experience a lot of volatility like today, like buying puts on a company that isn't expected to move a lot, and then it does move a lot, you profit a lot. Buying puts for Intel have definitely worked. And it's hard to justify buying even more after the stock has gone down nearly 20% in the last almost 2 weeks. Dude, that is crazy. Wait, let me just double check my math there. I'm gonna go to Google and drag here. Yeah, wow, I got it right on the dot. 19.99% as of the price at this very second. Wow, that was insane. Anyway, So Intel's been catching my eye. At a certain point, it's going to get to a number where the valuation makes sense. There's been a lot of doom and gloom because the foundry is expected to make money a little bit later. They push back the sort of goal of the foundry. They are making some AI chips that might compare to NVIDIA's current models, maybe. But of course, NVIDIA on their next series will blow them probably out of the water. But that's not confirmed. That's just like my take and my feeling. But Intel's interesting. I'm like looking at it every day. Shout out to Nala. Nala's one of the loved ones in the Discord. They trade Intel pretty heavily, so I just looked at them as like the Intel temperature check. Let's see. Also, AMD still solid. I traded AMD I think twice this week. I closed the AMD put credit spread. And I, did I close an AMD? I could check right now. Let me, Junie, if I can. Because I know I closed a NVIDIA put credit spread, but I also have an AMD one. Let's see, AMD put credit spread closed 4-1. No, that was last week. So I closed one last week, but not this week. But yeah, I opened a buy right on AMD that's doing, it's doing okay. Like I'm green on it. If it stays above 163, it's trading at 163 right now, so I'm still okay. Like I'm not freaking out, especially if there's a green day on Monday, just because today is so red. Wow, it'd be really Munka-esque or really scary if the market closed down, or not closed down, rather opened down on Monday. How crazy would that be? I mean, today's just such a red day. Oh, also Robinhood. So I am, oh man, you know, the amount of interest that I can make on my cash in my main account, if I had it in a Robinhood account, is getting to that point where I'm losing a good chunk of money that I could be gaining by just having my account be in Robinhood. However, that would impact like my 5K account, right? Like if I sort of moved all my money into Robinhood, there's no line drawn at where my 5K account is at. But I would love my money to be in Robinhood because, you know, I'm telling you guys that I'm withdrawing money from my TastyTrade account, my main account, and I could skip that entire process if I just have a Robinhood card, if I'm understanding how the Robinhood card works. So, and I could be earning interest on my money. And the interest rate is crazy right now. It's like 5%. And I think it would make a difference in my sort of trading pattern right now. What's 5% of 100K? Like say, for example, 5% of... It's 5,000 bucks. I mean, that's quite a bit. If I have like 200K invested on average for the rest of the year, and then I have 100K in cash, that's like $5,000 a year, which is like 3 rent payments. And see, and that's how I sort of view my income right now. Is like, how many months of rent is this, or like can this pay my X, Y, and Z bill for the month? Or, you know, if I do this covered call every month, then this pays for my phone bill every month. That's how I've sort of been trying to frame it, because maybe I get to a point where I trade to make ends meet and more, right? Like maybe I don't look for increasing my income through Patreon as much as I do just like trying to figure out a good balance of gaining interest on my unused cash with some reliable covered calls that I can write to help pay for expenses. I'm exploring all of that right now, which there's not a good amount of documentation on the internet. The documentation that I do find is really from people that I can't vet whether or not they still do this for full time, or if they've actually had success doing this full time. a lot of it seems very, very superficial. A lot of them are wearing like fancy watches. Like some of them have like collared shirts on, and some of them are wearing ties and like a dress shirt telling them like, oh, this is how I pay for my lifestyle. It's like, dude, no, dude, I just need someone. I just need a normal person to just be like, yeah, I like don't make a lot of money, but this is how I like pay for my expenses. Like that's the type of video that I'm looking for, but it just doesn't exist because maybe it's just not possible. But I'm finding that out slowly. I think another thing that I've sort of been talking about on the stream just with people is like, dude, McDonald's is not worth it anymore. I'm on that fence now. Like Taco Bell, much better in terms of like price to food ratio. Like I feel full off of eating Taco Bell and it's like a third of the price. It is crazy how much cheaper Taco Bell is, and it's closer too. So I mean, that's just even better, and it's open later. Like my Taco Bell is like open till like 4 a.m. Which is great, because like if I'm working on code and I'm like done at like 1:30, typically the McDonald's is closed, but then now I could just go to Taco Bell and it's pretty good. So McDonald's, too expensive for me now. They have lost a very core customer. I used to root for you guys. But, yeah. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of, like, day traders that have, like, this mentality of, like, hey, I live a normal life without Lambos. Maybe I could be the first one, but I have to prove it to myself it works first before I like share the secret. When it really is just like, hey, you just need this amount of money and maybe cover calls. I'm almost searching for like an early retirement number, but I don't have nearly as much money to do a retirement. But maybe I can just figure out something where I can get my expenses all done away with, you know. I make a little bit more from Patreon here. I make a little bit more from Twitch here. And a little bit more from covered calls here. It's tricky. What I am thankful for, though, is having your own schedule is really nice. It's funny, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, too. I wake up earlier now than I have ever in my life, like on average. Like I wake up at like 6, sometimes 7 if I like stayed up really late the previous night. But it's because I'm like excited to just wake up and do my own thing. It's nuts. Like you get excited to wake up is like the way that I justify me waking up earlier. And that might be why I think maybe, besides the chemical changes in your brain and stuff, but you know, we could talk about that another time. Maybe that's why older people enjoy getting up early, because they want to start experiencing life early. They're more appreciative of the time they have in the day, and they just want to get started. And I'm starting to see that reasoning. And a part of that is helping me understand like, oh, yeah, maybe at my previous job, I wasn't as happy, or my previous jobs. I don't know. I love my coworkers. I love the work that I was doing, but maybe, you know, just working a 9-to-5 that I wasn't so ecstatically excited for impacted my mood in the morning. So I'd rather be asleep than maybe like wake up to have a meeting, you know? So that's something that I've been also, been grateful for. Grateful for also the, my profit loss. Dude, my profit loss for this year is amazing. For the amount of trading that I've done, and by amount of trading that I've done, is like I've done a lot of trades. So I'm grateful that I have found a system that works for me where I can trade at a pretty steady volume of trades without having to like luckily time anything. Though I've gotten really also lucky on a lot of my NVIDIA plays, which has been insane. But, you know, it's luck, so I just can't speak to it that much. So we're getting really lucky, keeping the luck flowing and rolling with, like, making very well-responsible trades. I'm not taking, like, an amount or an immense amount of luck and, like, buying naked calls with it to keep it going. I'm, like, very much still doing buy rights because the market's shaky, just being aware. But yeah, I very hesitant to like have a podcast or have a stream, you know, if I have a negative profit loss, or rather that I'm, if I'm not beating the market, because like, why would you want to try to learn from someone that doesn't have a good track record? It doesn't make sense. Originally, ThetaGain.com was supposed to be me having a bad track record of ThetaGain style trades of like a few hundred trades and then stopping, right? And then someone else that does ThetaGain style trades can maybe look at that and then maybe do better than me or learn from it. But now I'm in this position where I'm doing really well, and I've been doing really well since 2019. And now that I'm streaming on Twitch, you come online and you see I have a 40K profit loss year to date. And I'm just still doing the same old thing, cover calls and cash secure puts and buying stock for dollar cost averaging from time to time. It's very boring, but you see where I sort of get at when I'm warning people of like being too smart, right? Like you can have your position sizing get out of whack. You can start doing strategies that you think work that you haven't put enough time into, and then not experiencing enough time to sort of manage the losers by having your position sizing just be a little bit too large in the beginning. Or, you know, maybe you win the first three, but then you up the position size on your fourth one by a considerable amount and you get got on that one. It's so tricky. Like balancing what you learn and filtering what you learn, and applying that to your own strategy. I think I'm a very much of a like learn as you do type of person. For example, I don't read any literature for like these buy rights I've been doing. It's just something that I've tailored because I've done the fundamentals of selling cover calls for such a long time. So I'm able to do the math very reliably with doing buy rights, where I can see where my max profit is in exchange for capping my gains. I'm able to justify all these things because I just worked on the fundamentals so much. Cash secure puts and cover calls are my bread and butter, and having buy rights be my like third trade type and essentially is a natural stepping stone. I think it's very good as well for a market like this. Excels in very volatile markets from my experience. So for anyone that is trying to learn a lot from other people, but also trying to develop your own flair, I still think copying someone's system that you can prove that works is a good start, and making tweaks to that one. I think the caution needs to be had when you think you have your own system, or when you do have your own system, and then you're just having trouble filtering what's real and what's not after you have a good understanding of what you believe is your own. Is if you start taking pieces and don't apply the fundamentals that you've learned before, like again, learning a new strategy after you have your own system, and then your position sizing gets out of whack because you get too excited, it doesn't matter how much of your own system you have or the fundamentals you have. If you forget fundamentals at one particular spot, it's one more area where you could get got, and especially on days like today. So I'm just keeping this very much in the forefront because, you know, I was in the beginning of this like 1% section, or the, you know, after I read the patrons' names, I was down 3K. Now I'm down 2.4K, you know. So, and previously that I was, or in the middle of that, I was down 4K. Today is nuts. And trying to buy calls and buy puts and sell calls and sell puts on a day like today would be crazy. This is such a frenzy. No one knows what's going on. But like today's episode, you'll figure out like your own system. You'll figure out when to cut your own losses. But it's always best to have those decisions planned before you get into the trade. It's much easier said than done, but I believe in you. So next trade you open, just come up with a scenario of what you would do if it went down to X price. And that's a good starting step. I'll see everyone next week on next week's episode. Today was pretty good, especially having to go through today's Friday's action. I think this will hit home for a lot of people listening to this on Monday. So I'll see everyone Monday morning on the Twitch stream at twitch.tv/realthetagain. Thank you, and have a great rest of your week.